the governor's letters to the appropriations committee, and we're honored to have Carrie Jo Gray and Mary Kay Hill. I'm sorry, Mary Kay. I forgot your first name. I knew the Hill. I couldn't say Carrie Jo Gray and Mrs. Hill. Anyway, welcome. You'd like to go over the letters for us? You punch the guy that's sneezing.
Bless you.
There you go.
Okay. All right. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for having us today. We're happy to be here. So we have 13 letters to go over with you, and we submitted a summary of those letters, and I think that went out as an additional handout. So just as a little bit of an overview, of these 13 letters, the majority of these would be directly off the governor's profile, and there's some corrections and variations of things in the profile that are on some of the letters, but basically the two letters that are not directly off the governor's profile are the letters that deal with the University of Wyoming. It's a budget request correction for the University of Wyoming due to a miscalculation in their insurance that happened that we agree with them ought to be corrected. And then the Department of Corrections, actually it'd be construction management for the Wyoming State Penitentiary for ongoing work at the Wyoming State Penitentiary. In this summary, across the top, you'll note that we tried to break out general fund requests, tobacco fund requests, and other fund requests. And so the total additions to the general fund side of the budget would be $31,495,000 that aren't currently reflected on the profile. You'll see that this is in part a change in funding source, a reduction of other funds. For example, under capital construction for community colleges, the governor had originally recommended that the community colleges construction request be funded from SIPA, and after the January Craig came out, he felt that it would be appropriate to amend that request and change it from SIPA to general fund. And then you will see that in the tobacco settlement funds, because tobacco revenues were lower than projected, that we have changed that to come from special funds. So we'll go over each letter, but just to sort of give you an idea about where those changes are. This is a summary of all 13 letters. Then we'll, as I said, we'll go through each letter. We have in the room various agencies represented that have special expertise in these, and if we need to have any detailed questions answered, I think that they're happy and available to provide those. We'll actually present the letters between myself, Mary Kay Hill, and Alex Kane. We checked with Chairman Nicholas, and I think that the letters are not in the order of the summary sheet on the profile. So letter number one is senior center funding, which is about halfway down on the profile, senior center funding, $200,000. And so senior centers have been particularly important, I think, to Wyoming and to this body and to the governor over the course of the last 7 years. Senior centers are statistically proven to allow seniors to live at home longer, to improve general health of seniors, and to and are important in Wyoming's communities. And so they struggle every year with appropriate funding for the activities and the services that they provide. And I think historically the governor has asked for this amount of money to support senior centers across Wyoming. And so we again ask for $200,000 for the support of senior centers.
I've been delivering Meals on Wheels for 29 years now, so I'm a supporter of the project. The question I have is what has changed between when the governor submitted his original budget and now that requires an additional $200,000.
So, Senator, I think every year as folks come forward and talk about the issues that they have in providing these kinds of services, the governor has simply wanted to highlight his support of senior centers. So this has been a request that he's made in every single one of his budgets. He's always made it as part of the profile as an addition to the budget. I don't I can't answer that. Maybe it should become part of the standard budget, but at this time, this has just been a standard supplement to the existing senior center budget that the governor has asked for.
But it's not in the profile that the governor submitted in December, either as standard or exception.
It is in this profile, it Senator. Is. This summary sheet includes both profiled and unprofiled dollars. At the bottom, the total of $31 million additional does not include those items already profiled. We simply are presenting a letter on items in the profile and then some additional items. I also found that a little confusing as I looked at this sheet and retotaled, but you'll see that the $200,000 is in the governor's profile. It's not included in the $31 million at the bottom of this sheet because it was already profiled. And if you'll note the kind of star at the bottom,
okay.
It says
additional.
Yeah, right.
And, Mr. Chairman, if I can clarify, when we talk about the governor's profile, we're talking about the document that goes in the front of the general budget recommendations.
Right.
So this amount, $200,000, is not in your 48, agency 48 budget. It is profiled on the governor's profile where he comes to the bottom line.
So it's not in his budget as he...
So it's not in the 48 budget, but he is signaling to you when he submitted that profile, this is something that's important to me. You're going to hear more about it later.
It's not in the agency budget.
It
is in
the
governor's
budget.
Profile. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So the sort of the summary sheet of the governor's profile, but not in the agency budget, not in agency 48.
Okay. So when we do our markup, we are working off the governor's budget. So we're going to have to add the $200,000 if we choose to.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, what you have traditionally, your traditional practice has been to operate off the agency budget, but then each governor's letter has received an up or down vote. And so it is through this letter that he would ask for a favorable vote.
Okay, is there anything in these letters that are already in the budget, in his budget?
No. In the agency budgets?
No.
Mostly no. Or yeah. When we get to community colleges, we get a chance for
okay.
additional conversation.
All right. Thank you.
Mary Kay.
Mr. Chairman, your next letter involves We the People. This is a project which is a recurring request. It comes at the end of the process. The way this works in the last three biennia that I'm aware of, a similar request for We the People has been offered by the governor via a governor's letter. The route that these funds take, and you have been supportive and have approved this funding in previous years, the route that these funds take is this money is then, it goes to the Wyoming Council for the Humanities, who in turn contracts with the University of Wyoming American Heritage Center. In previous years, there have been questions about what this money is used for, and so I want to underscore, We the People is not a Wyoming High School Activities Association approved activity. And so as such, does not qualify for the kinds of district support that would be given to your speech teams, your debate teams, your football teams, and the like. The We the People competitions are rigorous competitions focused on an understanding of the United States Constitution and of questions involving interpretation of constitutional activities. Wyoming, we are proud to say, has a strong program in many Wyoming high schools. It's an after-school program. Your Sheridan students, Mr. Chairman, have been very successful in the state competitions and have been a credit to the state in national competitions. In years past, it it came up, is this money that pays for those kids to go to Washington, D.C. to compete? And the answer there is no. This goes only for the expenses of the individuals who help coordinate the state competitions, and there is a significant effort to round up judges and to make this a real learning activity for those kids. So I will emphasize again, we continue to work with the people who sponsor this, and they are working on acquiring grants to help pay for some expenses, to pay for expenses for the national competition. They are hopeful that this may be the last time that we need to come to you through this mechanism. But it is something the governor supports. It's something you have funded before, and we respectfully submit the We the People request.
Don,
Co-chair.
Could you make a footnote that this will be the last time that we do this?
It'll be the last time Mary Kay will be here.
yes, it's actually to expand the program throughout the state. And even though Sheridan has won it the last three or four times in a row, the teacher that was the driver for it moved to Denver. So
Darn.
Other people are going to have a chance.
Well, they will have a chance, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah.
The next letter is titled on Title 25. I think this is a subject that most of you are familiar with. So the Department of Health pays for Title 25 involuntary commitments, and the cost for a number of years has exceeded the Department of Health standard budget for these detentions. The cost of these detentions and the number of detentions are not in the control of the Department of Health. What happens is that a Title 25 commitment hearing is held in district court, and the district court either orders somebody to be detained or not to be detained. If they're detained, they are sent to the state hospital in Evanston, and the cost for that can become quite extraordinary. There's the Department of Health, I think, has presented to you and to us over the course of the years that those numbers have somewhat inexplicable highs and lows. They have been on a steady upward trend for the last 4 or 5 years, but they have exceeded the actual standard budget for the Department of Health for the entire time that the governor has been in office. So last year, the legislature appropriated $10 million from the Legislative Stabilization Reserve account to help cover the costs of these emergency detentions and involuntary commitments. And so through December of this year, of that $10 million, the Department of Health has expended about $3.5 million. And the current trends, which they track very closely, indicate that they'll expend an additional $2.6 million through the remainder of this biennium and leave a balance of about $4 million. These expenditures are in addition to their standard budget. So their standard budget is about $4.3 million. So they've spent these monies out of the contingency fund in addition to their standard budget. And so as we move into the next biennium, the Department of Health requested an additional $10 million to be added to their standard budget of $4.3 million. And so what the governor had done with that recommendation is he recommended $6 million in general fund in addition to the standard budget. And that's actually in the Department of Health's 48 budget they made a request for $10 million and the governor recommended 6 of the 10 in addition to their standard budget. And then he further recommended that the balance of the emergency fund, which if these estimates are correct would be about $4 million, not revert but remain available in case projections are off and they actually need to use that fund, which has been the history. So this letter is actually about the $4 million not reverting from the LSRA, but we wanted to be sure and be clear about the $6 million request in their budget and that this request not to revert was in addition to the $6 million the governor has recommended as an addition to their standard budget.
Questions? Please continue.
Okay, the next letter is on the Wyoming State Penitentiary. And so The Wyoming State Penitentiary, actually, I think over the course since 2014, there was a special legislative task force that has worked on that problem. And really, I think the JAC has sort of become the task force just because of the magnitude of the problem and the need for additional reports. So in July, with Janney Elsner and Associates, came to this body, and they made some recommendations about some work that they thought could be done that would perhaps go ahead and slow the deterioration of the prison and actually stabilize the situation out there at a much lower cost overall than has been thought or at least discussed over the last 3 years for the Wyoming State Penitentiary. The need was to start immediately and to begin to go ahead and remove water and to make those kinds of provisions in the grading and some of the work that needs to be done to actually keep the water away from the building to slow the deterioration. So I think that the construction management and the Department of Corrections stays in close contact with this body to let them know the progress. We get a monthly report from them on where they're at. And in this letter, the governor did give you a sort of a summarized version of that progress. And the estimates going into the remainder of this year and into the next biennium are that there's an additional $5.184 million needed beyond the $7 million that has already been expended for the implementation of the WJE recommendations. Some of these funds are to complete the repairs that were recommended by WJE, and some of these funds will actually be used as things stabilize and settle. It's an extraordinary amount of money that it takes to replumb doors and to make sure that locks work correctly on those large doors. And so that is accounted for also in this $5.1 million. And so the governor recommends and asks you to consider an effective immediately appropriation of $5.184 million to finish the WGE recommendations and to continue to do the kinds of repairs that are necessary to make sure that all of the safety features at the Wyoming State Penitentiary are operational.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Burkhardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, Carrie, a couple questions, and maybe for the department, too. Originally, and a little, a few months ago, we went over this, and it was an estimate, I believe, of about $5.9 million to finish the WJE study. And this is for roughly $5.2 million. Has the amount of work been revised to show that change? I think all of us were dealing with, in our heads, that $5.9 million figure.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Burkhardt, I think Del McComey is in the room, and I'm going to ask him to respond to that directly. I don't think the scope of the work's been revised. I think that they had enough money to complete that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Del McComey, Director for the State Construction Department. The budget has been slightly adjusted. One of the things that in the report that during my presentation to the JAC we added was some snow fence. I think there's about $125,000 or so for that additional snow fence. The rest of it is within the budgeted amount that WJE had. They actually had a budget for the major maintenance that Chief Gray referred to, and this is ongoing maintenance over 5 years, is that building hopefully doesn't shift as much but becomes more stabilized, of about $5 million, a little over $5 million, I believe. We're asking for about 2.9 of that $5 million over the 5 years. Our thought there being that we'd probably see more of that settlement or shifting in those first 2 years as you would in the last 2 years of that $5 million as things stabilize. So I think where the difference in those WJE dollars are is that they didn't take into account some of the ongoing work that was happening during the report or during the time that they reviewed that, such as the F electrical I think that was outside of theirs, and that's being completed now.
Okay. Mr. Chairman?
Follow up.
So another question on that. It's coming from the general fund. What about the penitentiary permanent land fund? There was $13 million appropriated for a build-out at Torrington. The governor indicated he was not going to do that. Why wouldn't you revert that $13 million back to the permanent land fund and take this money from that? I mean, that's what that fund is there for, maintenance and operation of the penitentiary.
So, Mr. Chairman, Representative Burkhart, that fund is there, and we had discussion. The governor had a lot of discussion about that fund. But I think the feeling is that there really will come a time that money will be necessary at the medium security prison over in Torrington. It was for a build-out. It's also got maintenance issues at Torrington. And so since there is, in the governor's view, sufficient general fund to cover this without harming the amount that was designated by this body at some point to be used for Torrington, he felt it was a better use of the general fund than of the $13.5 million.
Senator Driscoll.
Could you elaborate on the maintenance issues at Torrington? I don't think we've been told about a whole lot there.
Sure. Mr. Chairman, Senator Driscoll, for example, there was some security issues with the fence and the way that the security was working around the fence. I think that that's been resolved. But when you have a large facility like this, there's just maintenance issues that come up at these facilities. The $13.5 million was originally appropriated or set aside or designated by the legislature because population projections suggest that in the not-so-distant future that there's going to be a need to add on to the Torrington facility. That need isn't this year or this biennium, but that was the part of the purpose of that fund. And because it's recognized that while they aren't immediate, they aren't this year, that those needs are in are continue to be projected and will continue to happen, the governor has felt that it would be better not to use that fund, which was set aside for that purpose.
Representative Burkhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, Kerry, following on to that, that was in the $13.5 million was in the CapCon bill in 2016. Now, it's my understanding that was narrowly written so that money could not be used for anything except the build-out. It could not be used for maintenance. It could only be used for the build-out of that one wing. So I think that probably need to make some changes there if that money is going to be for other maintenance.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Burkhart, that's absolutely correct. I don't think I did a good job there. I don't think there's an immediate need for any of the $13.5 million, not at Torrington and not really at the Wyoming State Penitentiary, or at least in the governor's view, it's more appropriate to use the general fund. There continues to be a projection that there will be needs, and the governor felt that when the money was originally appropriated that way, that was the purpose, and since the need kind of looms in the future, that if it's not necessary to use the money, he didn't want to. So he's not actually intending at this point. There aren't maintenance needs that he would ask the legislature to designate the money to be used for. It's just a fund that's available if those needs become more of a reality. So I think the fence problem, which was really quite expensive to change out all of the security at that fence, we were able to do with regular maintenance from prison.
Gotcha.
Mr. Kocher.
So, Mo, the way that you described this was that the $1.5 million will be expended over a four-year period. Is that how it's currently planned?
Mr. Chairman, the $5.18 million, that would be all but $2.9 million of that would be spent this summer. The $2.9 million of that amount is for ongoing maintenance, such as doors, windows, fixing additional cracks that may come up or occur. So that's our estimate based on the WJE recommendations for the biennium. So $2.9 of the 5.1 would be over the biennium. The remainder of that would be this summer.
Have you provided a breakdown of what that 2 billion yen is going to be expended for?
We did in our response back to the committee. We were asked to do that in our JAC summary, so you should have that in our responses back.
There was the last note we had, Mr. Co-Chair, was that there they found 2 more breakages in the sewer lines. Do we know how old they were, or can we tell by when we've gone in? And I understand they've gone in and been fixed now. So by going in and looking at the location, how saturated it was, what it looked like, how long of a problem it has been?
Mr. Chairman, we suspect that one of those was probably a long-term break. I think the good news on that one is the soil that was around that particular break had good compaction, so there wasn't a lot of leakage of that out into the building at, like some of the other places we found. The one that we suspect occurred due to difference in settlement, and it also had been there for quite a while, was outside the building, outside the foundation, a couple, 3 foot. And that one, we did see quite a bit of water around the foundation and when we made those repairs.
Representative Schwartz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just curious, how is the money in that penitentiary permanent land fund invested?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Schwartz, I don't know.
Mr. Chairman, I believe it's in the state agency pool, and it has a balance of, I believe, about $15.6 million in it today. But out of that would be the $13.5 million that's already been appropriated.
Thank you. Just a quick question along these lines. Dell, you're talking about putting up the you put up snow fence. Is this the type of snow fence we see along the interstate?
Mr. Chairman, it is. We're going to put that outside the fence facilities, and hopefully we can stop some of that drift, that heavy drifting that goes up against the building on the south facility on the west end. We also, Wyoming Department of Transportation, their blowing snow team came out and ran, looked at that and actually came out to the facility. They also recommended snow fence at 3 locations along the roadway on as you come into the gate to look at the south facility along that roadway and then along those ball fields, and the DOC has already implemented and put those fences in place. They're shorter fences, about 4 foot, but the ones outside the facility are going to be those 12 to 14 foot fence like you see along I-80.
And so they do an engineering study of the wind and like a wind tunnel kind of study and can determine that a fence 50 yards away is going to produce less drifting snow over here?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. They've already completed those studies, made their draft recommendations to us, so we'd be ready to move forward if the funding's available to meet with the Wyoming Department of Transportation, have them finish those designs. And then my plan was, is since they're the experts in getting that installed, is just use their engineers to make sure that was constructed correctly and get it all laid out, since it is outside the fence and they wouldn't be having to come within the side of the facility.
All right. Thank you. Any other questions on this particular letter from the governor? Seeing none. We're on to number 5.
Mr. Chairman, I believe this is the letter Abandoned Mine Lands Extension of Prior Authorization. This letter is really about the Pipeline Corridor Initiative. It was first passed in 2012, and it uses AML prior balance funds. And what this letter is asking for is a continuation of those funds. The project continues to make progress toward acquiring administrative authorization from the BLM. They're going through, and the funds are necessary to continue work on the EIS and plan of development detailing how the Pipeline Corridor Initiative will be utilized and coordinated with BLM. These typically take years to complete, and so this letter is asking for reauthorization of those funds to the governor's office. And Ideally, this would be through June of 2022, which is the expected duration of the remainder of this program. I would note these are AML funds, and so it's an authorization by the legislature to use these funds for this purpose.
Mr. Co-Chair.
I'm just curious, how much money is left in there? I mean, how much it was used? Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, the original appropriation was $2 million, and the balance is about $948,000 right now.
So we can only extend it to 2020, correct?
Mr. Chairman, I think that it is a question of if this reauthorization is in the budget bill, then it would be for the two-year period. You have had AML bills in the past that go longer than that, but in the budget bill, we understand it would be a two-year extension.
Okay. Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, Alex, I was a little surprised as I read this that we didn't hear anything from Mr. Jeffries on this effort when we had the pipeline authority here. So I guess I'm just wondering if you can tell us where we're at in that EIS process and in a time frame that might be over and a decision made.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, you maybe didn't hear anything from Brian Jeffries because actually there's a position associated with the governor's office that has most of the responsibility for the work on this particular initiative, which is why the money has been moved to the governor's office. And so actually it's just great progress has been made, and it's really a good news story. It's just a frustrating thing how long this takes. So in the governor's office, policy advisor Matt Fry works on this particular issue, and so that pipeline corridor has been mapped, and there has been baseline analysis, and so now the environmental impact study is really under the auspices of the federal agencies, and so Matt is working closely with those agencies to really push as fast as we can get it an EIS and the NEPA process that gets through the process, and there's a hope that it will effective work will be conducted even before the end of the governor's term, but there is not a hope that will actually get completed before the end of the governor's term. These are just really time-consuming processes that can be really frustrating to work through.
Follow-up, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Larson.
Thank you. So we're funding it through the Pipeline Authority, but the governor's office is doing the work.
It's actually in the governor's office, isn't it? Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, I think originally the appropriation was to the Pipeline Authority. I think there was an amendment to that appropriation that actually put the money into the governor's office. And so I think you see it buried in there. So this is actually money out in the governor's office budget.
I see it now. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Ms. Gray.
Any other questions on this letter? All right, let's move to number six.
Mr. Chairman, this letter also deals with a carryover of a prior appropriation. This one regards the Integrated Test Center. The original appropriation was for $17.275 million for the Wyoming Value Added Energy and Industrial Plan, the biggest piece of which is the Integrated Test Center. The funding for that has moved through the bienniums, but is set to revert on June 30, 2018, and this letter is asking for that. And I apologize for the typo in the very last part, but asking for this to continue through 2020.
Questions? Seeing none. Number seven.
Community colleges.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mary Kay Hill, to discuss the governor's request related to Community College capital construction. When the governor prepared his budget, which was submitted December 1st, he had all of the requests, which you have in front of you, related to community college capital construction, but was frustrated in that he didn't feel like he had sufficient information to make a good recommendation. Part of that confusion is that you justifiably slowed down certain community college capital construction in the last session and in the previous biennium because resources were constrained. So as a result, two of the projects which had been approved in the previous session did not move through the pipeline like they might have otherwise. So with this letter, the governor is advising this committee that he concurs with the recommendations that were forwarded to you by the community college presidents when that budget was discussed with the community college commission and with the presidents. To summarize, the governor recommends five projects to receive capital construction funding. The first, the capital, or the Casper College Visual Arts Facility at $7.75 million, a level three and construction appropriation. Second priority, the Northern Wyoming Community College District Health Sciences Building at a $392,700 level two planning. Number three, the Laramie County Community College Fine Arts Facility at $7 million in level three and construction. Fourth, the Northwest College Visual and Performing Arts Center at a $1,098,000 level two planning amount. And then finally, number five is his priority at $1.1 million in level two funding. In the governor's budget submitted December 1st, he drew a line at $20 million, and that amount was profiled for you as coming from the SIPA account. With this letter, we propose moving that source from SIPA to a general fund expenditure, and that is in view of the Craig report that we have just received. In addition to the amounts that were in the president's letter, there are additional amounts requested specifically for the construction of those facilities I just referenced. And that would total $3.54 million for the construction management, and that amount represents construction management side contingency funds, as well as the administrative costs of the involvement of construction management as those projects move forward into the construction phase. With two of these projects, the Casper College Visual Arts Facility and the Laramie County Community College Fine Arts Facility, the governor recommends that those are contingent. So we have the use of the word contingency involving the actual budget, and contingent meaning that they are contingent on a local match, either through local or private resources from the college. The second piece of this letter references the request for major maintenance at Western Wyoming College. The governor recommends $571,200 for the level two major maintenance review project, but this is also a project that has raised a number of questions in our office and really across the state. On one hand, the nature of the work is most logically defined as major maintenance work. On the other hand, the scope of the project, which could be $8 million, $14 million, $16 million, it just swamps any sort of major maintenance request we have seen at any time in recent memory with regard to community college major maintenance. So the governor's request here, specifically with regard to the Western Wyoming major maintenance request, is that the level two funds be provided, but that this committee include a provision for increased involvement with the State Construction Department in evaluating the scope of that plan, and that when that group comes back with the next round of requests, that the local resources be part of that conversation. In our research and in speaking with the community colleges, the state provides significant major maintenance, but in no college did we see that the colleges rely entirely on the state major maintenance funds to address the needs of their facilities. And so the governor believes that it is appropriate to talk to the college about what local resources come to bear as they address this particular college. And I will, as we wrap this up, your community college major maintenance funds are then distributed under a formula, and you've heard from the colleges that they believe their needs exceed the funds provided. But once provided to the college, then are designated by the college for projects of a priority according to that board of trustees and according to that administration. And we had questions as well, what is the role of the state to direct investments of major maintenance funds, particularly when you have an infrastructure scope such as the one that Western has brought to all of us. So, Mr. Chairman, to recap, the governor profiled $20 million in SIPA funds for the total project. He was silent on the Western Wyoming appropriation. You now have a recommendation in front of you that is $21,385,700, all of which he proposes would come from general fund and is now inclusive of the Western Wyoming major maintenance level 2 project and adds additional costs for the state construction oversight and contingency attached to the level 3 construction projects.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Hill, on page 2 of Dr. Schaefer's letter, the Northwest College Visual Arts Center is listed at $1,109,000, and I assume on page 1 of the governor's letter that it's a typo, or has he modified the request?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, the typo occurred within the president's letter. So if you double back to your capital construction budget, the number in the governor's letter and the number that's actually printed in your CapCon budget, those numbers are the same.
Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Don, can you remind me what the typically in the past has been the process and the for the legislature to fund level 2 components of the of CC projects? I mean, I just bring that up because my recollection is historically, typically the level 2 projects were funded by the community colleges. But I could be wrong. I might be mixed up. So.
Well, and while he's looking that up, I just wanted to clarify. Numbers 1 and 3, the Visual Arts Facility at Casper College and LCCC Fine Arts, those are the two that are matched?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Is it a one-for-one match?
If it's not 50-50, it's darn close. But I think it is, President Chambers here, yes, it is 50-50.
Senator Landon.
In line with the chairman's question, Mary Kay, $14 million doesn't seem like a lot. Is that the total cost of these buildings? I haven't seen either one of them, so I'm just shooting in the dark here. If we appropriate these $7 million figures for those two buildings, they are to go out and match with their local funds an equal amount, giving them each around $14, $15 million for those buildings. So am I reading that correctly, that would be the total and they could build those buildings for that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Landon, that is our understanding. These are projects that have gone through level 1, level 2 analysis. Now, they're a little old, so the colleges may have some reconciliation there to do, but our request is for the amounts you see here, 7.75 and 7 million. If there is an increase, it would be our position that would be on the colleges.
Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'd be curious to see what Don finds there on this level two. So in the meantime, though, because we are venturing into new territory, Mary Kay, it's, you talked about increased involvement with this Western Wyoming project. Is that kind of the answer to say, okay, we're going to go into something new, but we want state construction right in the middle of all of it?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dockstader, what's new is also old. At one
yes,
point,
Yoda.
Yeah, there you go. There is no tried and true process for the construction of capital projects on our community college campuses. Over the years, there was a process in which the commission was more heavily involved with oversight and value engineering, and in recent years, that role was taken away from the commission, and the administration of the project was placed with what was then construction management, but without any designation of authority with regard to how that's used. Part of that legislation, which was sponsored by Senator Bebout and Senator Schiffer, God rest his soul, at the time, removed kind of an oversight role from any state agency and, in fact, required that the state funds be used first and then the local funds get kicked in. Now, that was a swinging of the pendulum from when the local or when the state match was the last dollar to be used. So you've moved back and forth. The major maintenance project specifically is unprecedented in my experience. And because of the scope of what is being requested in terms of state resources, that is why the governor felt the involvement in an increased way of construction management would be helpful in informing the next round of recommendations. Is there a way to stagger some of those projects and use the major maintenance funds that are routinely being given to the college? We don't know that, but we sure would like those answers before the next, like I say, $8 million, $14 million request is on our desks.
Mr. Co-Chair, would you want to like to restate your question? Because I think Don has an answer.
Don, what's your recollection or understanding of how the Level 2 for projects is funded or has been over time?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Level 1 is always funded by the colleges. Level 2 I would describe as having precedent to be state-funded. It is neither rare nor regular. It's somewhere in between. So looking past, I can find in 2015, three community colleges, Riverton, Casper, and Sheridan, all benefited from state funds for Level 2. So it does happen. It is not consistent. And then Level 3, again, is generally 50-50 in the more modern era.
But, Don, my recollection is that's a new trend for the Level 2 fund.
Mr. Chairman, I think that's fair to say that it certainly has not occurred more than a decade ago, more than 8 years ago. It's rather new.
And then also with regards to the 50-50 funding at the, for example, here we've got Casper College and LCCC at 7.75 and then $7 million. So they're funding 50% of that, but then you throw on top of that what capital construction throws on, and is not a 50-50 split typically. So at the end of the day, it ends up being like a 55-45 cost basis, and that's the way it's kind of been going on in the past. Is that an accurate characterization?
Mr. Chairman, I think it's important. The legislature has never authorized that $3.4 million of contingency or administrative costs by construction management. That agency has requested that. The legislature has never approved it. It is authorized in statute that they can ask for it, and that's, presume, what they're doing here. It does shift the 50-50 balance, particularly on the contingency side, is entirely borne by the state under that process.
And my understanding is that when the community colleges submit their construction budgets on their level three, it already has a contingency in it. So it's basically contingency on a contingency.
Mr. Chairman, that's my understanding as well, correct?
Thank you.
The other question I have about this is arts are, you know, arts are nice and they're great and visual arts are swell. But, you know, the prime aim of colleges is a little more hardcore. So I'm trying to figure out why Casper and Laramie are number three, one and three, when, for instance, Northern Wyoming Community College, you know, you're talking about health sciences, nursing school, and so forth. And Northwest, you're talking about the student union, which is probably, you know, probably the key building for that entire college complex. And so I'm wondering why the governor, if you could give us insight into why the governor put these in this order of priority.
Mr. Kocher, I can speak to LCCC. LCCC's community college fine arts building is not as nice as most junior highs right now. And literally, we would take Caspers and dance until we're blue in the face if we had anything like their existing building, let alone that. So, I think
you mean like the spoiled brats up in Detrona County?
I can just tell you that there is no high school that I've been in that has every high school I've been in has a better one than the Casper Community College has in Laramie. I can't speak so much about the Visual Arts Center in Casper. In fact, I think I'd rather have Rodeo Arena, but let Mr. Walter speak to that. So.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Landon may have an amendment, but on the rodeo question, but I would like to return to your question because it's an important one. How did the governor provide you with these priorities? These priorities reflect the priorities that the community college presidents met and agreed upon were their priorities, and so he concurred with the way that they had prioritized those. And it may also be helpful to know how when the projects originate, the Community College Commission, as a process it uses to evaluate and prioritize the current requested projects. So if the Community College Commission approved, as they did with a couple of these, a project 2 years ago, then they don't revisit them again. They only evaluate and make recommendations on the projects that come to them. And in that process, they have a formula, which again is relatively new. It's something Governor Mead actually asked them to get to work on in 2012 that includes the impact on student access to students. And there is a component for connection to the workforce. And so in the case of LCCC, and I'm going to drive Dr. Schaefer crazy carrying some of his water, but they built a flex tech building, which is intended specifically to reach those workforce things. Some of these arts projects have come along as priorities because at those colleges, they have been building health facilities and some other things. And so as these projects roll through the commission formula, there are multiple pieces, student impact, degree potential, and demand. And then there is also a provision for what is the ability of the community college district, to pay for this, and that's where you get to a 50-50. There is a project in another college in which the legislature weighed in with significantly more than the 50% mark because it was located in a district in which the assessed valuation would not have produced anywhere near what could have occurred here and the capacity to build outside funds. But you have a really great CTE facility at Eastern Wyoming College as a result of that decision. But so the 50-50 moves around as well. The local participation moves around as well as that is all cycled through the process.
Well, just in answer to that, and I think one of the things that bothers me about it is arts, visual arts and so forth, arts facilities, fine arts, tend to be a little more to the side of the aim of community colleges. And so, for instance, Sheridan College has, I think, a nicer facility than Casper College. But it was built with no state funds at all. It was a local thing. And Sheridan's not even a third of the size of either Casper or Cheyenne. So the question I have is, if these colleges know that the state's going to come in and pay for half of it, why bother to go out and try and fundraise or get any local support?
So, Mr. Chairman, I'll let the colleges speak to that, but I will point out you are so fortunate in your county to have and some funders and some private foundations that are so committed to watching to building that college. And I think Sheridan is the envy of many of their peers for that capacity.
Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I, again, just want to make sure, Ms. Hill, if I can make sure that I've got the numbers correct. We've got the $20 million for the capital construction projects, the major maintenance component of the $571, and then is that $3.54 million in addition to that for the contingency and administrative costs?
Mr. Chairman, that amount is rolled into this $21.3 million total.
Okay,
so the colleges, in the letter that's attached here, the colleges came in with a number that was under the governor's original $20 million profiled amount. So our recommendations take it over that, but that $3 million, as referenced, that is asked routinely and denied routinely, that's inclusive in this $21 million amount.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Walter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question here. The letter from the community colleges states $7.5 million for the Casper College project, and the governor's letter requests $7.75 million. Is there a typo, or did that project increase in price, or why the difference?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, that is a typo in the president's letter. So the number that is here in our governor's letter matches up with the amount that you'll find in the capital construction budget.
Senator Landon.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Mary Kay, thanks for touching on this. What's been in the back of my mind is this whole issue of projects that have come across our desk through the years, and then we don't see them again. And is that a byproduct of each college deciding whether or not to even bring those forward again, or as a result of rerunning the formula that you alluded to that began in 2012, and they just fall off, and these become more important than what was there before? And then the other part of that question is, how many of those kind of projects are there out there that we have seen and sometimes even thought of or approved, and they've just kind of been set aside? Or do you know that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Landon, I couldn't answer your question, but there have, over the history of these, any number of projects that built up a lot of support and got right up to the line and for whatever reason fell below the line. There's nothing that prevents a college from making another run through first. So if you are a project that was flat denied, you may look for local resources. You may look for other funding streams. Now, there are projects in your capital construction budget that we have not talked on about today in which they are being 100% funded by the local community college through local resources of whatever stripe. Those are submitted to you for approval, because then they do become part of the major maintenance square footage and other calculations. So any building that could be funded under that scenario still comes through here, so that you see it, you authorize it, you add the square footage to the system total. This deals only with those projects that seek state funding, and I'm not sure if Jim Rose is here to speak on behalf of the commission, but if a project needs to be resubmitted, it would be held up to the same scope, the same criteria But I don't believe there's anything that prevents it from coming back through.
Mr. Chairman, Mary Kay is correct in the sense that the Commission's only role now in the capital construction process really is to accept, using the college's master plans, recommendations from the colleges for projects that they need to undertake. And those projects can either be requesting state funds or they can simply be requesting authorization. There are projects, in fact, which the Commission must approve anytime they exceed $100,000 in cost. And if the level rises to $1 million or more, the legislature must approve and authorize. That does not mean, however, that the legislature will have any role at all in the future of those projects in terms of their funding, because there are some that are entirely internally funded. And I believe state policy and in terms of major maintenance, and I'd have to defer to state construction, but there are some projects that are actually require authorization that will not receive major maintenance funding. Those are residential projects. So there's a mixture, but if a project is received and prioritized by the Commission, unless the scope of that project changes in some dramatic way, the Commission does not reprioritize. So to Senator Landon's question, what can happen is a project may be authorized by the Commission, approved by the Commission, and then authorized as well by the legislature, but the match doesn't occur. And as a consequence, there isn't sufficient funds to proceed with that project. Sometimes the colleges go back and try to trim back the project, find other sources of funding, but in some cases that just doesn't happen. And so we have some projects that have yet to be commenced simply because the funding hasn't been there. There are other instances in which the colleges have received authorization for level two funding, and then the process has not gone forward. So as Mr. Richards indicated, level two normally commits the state to some part of the process, because level two funding is for a fairly significant amount of work on the part of the design professionals. If the state commits to that, then there's oftentimes a sort of presumption that there will be some state support. But that hasn't always occurred either. So there's a multitude of scenarios that can affect whether a project proceeds. And now, because the Commission essentially simply turns a list to state construction of those projects that are prioritized, and then those projects unprioritized for simple authorization with no state funds, that's the extent of the Commission's role now. So we don't then carry forward any administration of construction funding and the oversight of the actual projects once they commence.
Thank you. Any other questions on this governor's letter? Seeing none,
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hastert.
I think this is more for Don. Just a clarification for myself. It says in the top part of the letter, it says, I set aside $20 million from FY 2019 revenue, which would otherwise be deposited into the strategic investment. So the total that I saw was 21.8. So out of curiosity, was the $20 million already profiled?
Mr. Chairman, it was recognized but not profiled because it was contingent upon available investment income, and since we don't project capital gains, that appropriation would have been contingent upon those gains.
So it's not on the gold.
It is not on the gold run.
Thank you.
Any other questions on Governor's Letter Number 7? Seeing none, let's move on to Governor's Letter Number 8, cybersecurity.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, so this is ETS has spent in the governor's time, was up until last year a zero-based budget each and every year. Last year, the governor established a standard budget for ETS, and at the same time, ETS is under new administration with Director Tony Young. So I think that ETS is a success story for the legislature and for the governor with cost savings and streamlined services in a more effective way to look at technology across the state. The it's a maturing agency. It's brand new in its operations to some degree, and it's just coming into its own. And in addition to that, technology is an ever-moving target. So what we have now is, I think, increased focus by private companies, by government, and by individuals on cybersecurity and the kinds of attacks that take down systems, that steal information, that require constant monitoring. And so for a couple of years, we've talked about cybersecurity education and a program to train people in this emerging field at the University of Wyoming and at community colleges. At the same time, what we had not talked about until this year is the need to make sure that our systems across the state are protected and enhanced with state-of-the-art kinds of software and programs and licenses that make sure that those attacks on information and on our system itself to keep it from going down stay in performance. So ETS had conducted I think an intense look at their own operations and what would be required to make sure that we were adequately and properly protected with regard to cybersecurity needs. And you will see that they provided kind of a comprehensive, at least an overview, of what those kinds of needs are that they think are essential for the state to be in a place that is good for cybersecurity. And the total of that is $2.291 million. And so the governor requests consideration by you of his letter that recommends that we go ahead and invest in those software and licenses that ETS has indicated are necessary for us to maintain appropriate cybersecurity.
Representative Summers.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And I know Tony's gave these numbers before, but maybe he could repeat them or you.
Is your mic on?
I think my mic is on.
Could you move it closer, please?
I'll just talk louder.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman. So my question is how many attacks per day or per month does the system get? I've never got that wrote down. It'd just be good to write on this letter so we have that.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Representative Summers, most recently our report is that we receive, and when I say most recently, my last actual venture into this was around July of 2017. So this has only gone up. But at that time, we were receiving about 225,000 attacks on the state's network from various sources, including rogue states and hackers. That occurs every 24-hour period, about 6.7 million a month, and it's climbing from there. So I don't know what the present numbers are.
Tony, I got confused. Can you give me those figures again? 225,000?
Roughly 225,000. That might be a rounding.
Is that per month?
Per day.
That's per day.
That's per day at about 6.7 million. Boy, I hope my math is. I'm doing this from memory. It's considerably less than what our contiguous states are, but we are still a very viable target, particularly in the oil and gas and applications for drilling permits and things like that.
Mr. Chairman? Yes, Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director Young, of those numbers, I mean, are they all unsuccessful because we have antivirus and hardened systems and such like, or is there some percentage that kind of breaks through a first level and that needs to be fended off at a second level. I'm not sure what the right terminology would be, but I'm sure you get what I'm getting at.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wilson, those are the number of attacks that we know that are not successful at the time. Those that we're not aware of any of that are successful, but generally speaking, you wouldn't know that they were successful until some time down the road. If I could just interject temporarily, just as a side note here, the ETS, we have hired a new Chief Information Security Officer. He came on board with us in November. He sits beside me here. Mr. Arlen Fletcher is our Chief Information Security Officer. I sleep much better at night now having him here. We stole him from Gonzaga University, where he was the Chief Information Security Officer there, and prior to that with the Denver University down in Denver, Colorado. So some of these questions I'm touching on them, but Arlen is the expert, and I would encourage, if you have any specific questions about that, Arlen, I think, would be prepared to address those.
Representative Larson.
Thank you. Director Young, of that 2.2 million in this request, how much of that would then need to be carried over in your budget moving forward?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, pretty much all of it.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Thank you. Letter number 9, Employees Group Insurance Carryover.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, so there's a couple people really well-versed in the insurance here, which would be Kevin Hibbard from Budget and Alex Kane from Economic Analysis. But we've spent the summer going over employee group insurance. So what happens is that employee group insurance every April analyzes the employee plan to determine whether or not premiums are sufficient to cover the costs of carrying the insurance, and also to maintain a sufficient cash balance for insurance. And those projections that are made on a calendar year. But appropriations, of course, are biennial, and so they always lag to some degree the reanalysis of employee group insurance. And it gets complicated. And over the course of the governor's administration, there have been rate holidays. There's been money returned. And part of it is just a nature of how difficult it is to – and we hire an actuary, an expert, to go ahead and make these projections and analysis. So it's a very difficult thing to – it's a combination of what kind of plan an employee covers, what the cost of health care is across the state, and, of course, if there's major medical events that are hugely expensive. So last summer we actually reverted $26.675 million, and, of course, included in agencies' budgets was enough money to cover a rate increase that was projected for that biennium for the current biennium at 21.24%. So things look more grim going into the next biennium as healthcare costs continue to rise, the cost of insurance continued to rise. And so there was a lot of meetings and a lot of concern about what the right number was over the course of the summer. The governor arrived at a number of an 11.1% premium rate increase that would be sufficient to maintain a positive cash balance. And that notice goes out to employees in December prior to this body meeting. So the timing is always just off, but that's actually required timing for rate increases for insurance. Insurance is included in the budget, and it's an 85-15 split with the employer, the state covering 85% of any premium increase and the employee 15, and of course the balance of the policy is covered at that rate as well. So the the standard budget that was in place for the last biennium, which had an estimated rate increase in it, which was not necessary to use all of it, actually has sufficient money to cover this rate increase from the perspective of the employer without any additional money being required to be appropriated from the employer's perspective to cover an 11.1% rate increase. It will pay its increased price, but just out of the existing budget, which was too generous. So the governor is recommending that any funds budgeted for health insurance not revert, but be swept into the auditor's office to cover any potential rate increase. To be clear on that, so that is that there will be this reversion of $26 million or of an unknown amount. The reversion is in an unknown amount at this point in time, and that it would not be necessary to use that reversion, but if there was an increase beyond 11.1%, which is currently in effect, which that news was given to employees in December, effective with their January paycheck, they're paying their additional 15%, state's paying their additional, their additional 11.1%, and the state's paying its additional 11.1%. The existing budget is sufficient to cover that. But if there's a need for an additional rate increase in the next calendar year, then the $26 million or the unknown amount of the reversion would be available in the auditor's office to cover that if it were necessary, because it would always come into effect prior to the legislature coming back into session. So part of that comes from a debate at the beginning of the this debate over the summer. The projections about what was necessary as far as a rate increase ranged from a low of 6% to a high of 20%. And the problem is that we end up giving rate holidays and we end up misprojecting. Generally speaking, we've misprojected high because it's a safety net that we wouldn't ever want to be in a position to not cover health care costs that we've committed to cover. We believe 11.1% is the right number, but next year there will be another opportunity to analyze that and to see if that was the right number. So because I've misspoke a couple of times, let me be clear. The reversion amount is unknown. The request is to take that unknown amount, stick it into an account in the auditor's office to be used in the event that there needs to be a rate increase in the next calendar year. The existing budget will cover the rate increase for this calendar year. The further request in the last paragraph of the budget is last biennium, what the legislature did is we were maintaining a relatively high cash balance in the insurance account. There's a minimum kind of a cash balance that you need just to have a cushion against health care costs and rising health care costs for pharmaceuticals and for the costs of dental claims and the like. But when that cash balance gets so high, you actually get penalized. And again, because I think we've tended in the past to overproject as a conservative way to look at health care costs, that too has been part of the rate holiday, and it's also been money that has sat unavailable for other needs of the state. So last biennium, the governor recommended that we reduce the cash balance, and we did so. And then the alternative, just because you never want to be in a situation where you can't cover health care costs, that the legislature authorized borrowing authority out of, and in the last biennium it was out of pooled funds, for in the event that there was a need to use that money. There was no need to use the money. None of the borrowing authority was ever used as a safety net. And so the governor recommends that we reauthorize the borrowing authority and not keep that cash balance as high as we have historically kept it. And so, but this, in this letter, he recommends that it be out of the LSRA. And part of the reason that we're recommending these be out of the LSRA as opposed to the pooled funds is that the treasurer's office has expressed some concern if there would ever be a need to borrow about the pooled funds, go across to about 400 400 different agencies and accounts, and it would be very difficult for him to keep track of appropriate borrowing out of that account. And so he feels that it would be better if we didn't borrow out of the pooled fund. We've twice in these letters, in this letter and then in a letter that's coming up a little later, asked for borrowing authority. Those are a reauthorization of borrowing authority that this body has granted in the past, and it's a safety net situation that the governor believes is appropriate, and I think you share that belief.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, I have two separate questions, but I'll do them one at a time. Ms. Gray, the first one is, I think I heard from earlier today that the state agency pool actually is right now still has a loss, which I guess would be a negative interest rate. So would it be okay to set like 0 or 0.5% or something rather than tie it to what the state agency pool is earning? That's the first question.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wilson, I didn't think the governor would be either way. If this body felt that would be well, just a second, I see Alex wanting to contribute. So,
Mr. Chairman, the state agency pool does have a loss of realized capital losses. That's treated as a cash liability against the total fund. It was still returning a little over 2%, 2.25%. Return on investment and dividend income.
That said, Representative Wilson, I don't think the governor would be object if you chose to set an interest rate as opposed to using the interest rate off the fund.
Continue.
It was a separate question. I wanted to give someone else a chance. Mr. Chairman, Ms. Gray, then my other question is just somewhat aligned with this, but I never thought to ask it before. I'm wondering how we pay our third-party administrator. Are they paid on a percentage of claims, or are they paid a flat fee, and do you know how much that is?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wilson, I do not. I don't know if ANI is represented here today. Yeah, we can get back to you with that. I don't know the answer to that.
Representative Summers.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. So my issue is and maybe you explained this. So the governor used a rate holiday to make what is ostensibly a cut last time. And now suddenly this was not unknown that health insurance rates were going to go up. So here we are making a cut that, in my opinion, really didn't exist. And now we need the money back anyway to pay for what we knew were going to be increased rates. But you did say that if we hold too much money in the fund, then we are liable for some charges. And so without being in great detail, just kind of elaborate a little bit on that and make me feel a little bit better about what we did.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Summers, when this analysis is done, and it's a really complex analysis, it's done. We hire an outside actuary, and it's done in conjunction with EGI, Employee Group Insurance, which has some expertise. And so the trick, of course, is to estimate exactly, how much the cost of healthcare will go up. And also, you have situations where you have extraordinary kinds of events. If you have one baby in Denver for some period of time and the cost of that is in the millions of dollars, I mean, one severe incident can really affect what you pay. It is the nature of the actuary and of EGI to be conservative, and I think we all appreciate that and the need to be conservative. But when you carry too large of a cash balance, you actually get a penalty against that cash balance by the federal government because they don't want – we're self-insured, but they don't want insurance companies to hold on to a lot of money at the expense of the insured. So we're in a little bit different situation where, we don't really gain from holding that money. We just we're subject to the same rules with regard to how that is worked. So in the course of the first year that the governor was governor, so it would have been in the previous administration budget, it's just always a challenge, right? There were two rate holidays that needed to be given. And so basically what was able to happen is for a long period of time, I think 4 years, and I might stand corrected on that, the state was actually able to, in the face of rising health care costs and the costs that other folks are, you know, seeing in their insurance rates and through the ACA and the like, actually to maintain no increases in its insurance premiums to employees and still to maintain that really large cash balance. Nonetheless, it continued to grow, and last year we had to give a rate holiday. And so the decision is really a policy decision, the cash balance can't be used. It's always that you want the rates to cover the cost of insurance, and you carry the cash balance just as a reserve. So the projection right now is that 11.1% rate increase is that the premiums paid by employees will actually cover exactly the cost of healthcare, which is a difficult thing to project, but you keep a cash balance in the event that your projection is off, and there are differences of opinion among people about what is the proper cash balance, but you get it too high, you get penalized. So what this body did in the last biennium and in some discussion with the governor is say, well, let's reduce the amount that we keep as the cash balance, but let's keep borrowing authority in the event. So that way the money becomes available to be used for other things that the state needs. And if we're wrong, we still have been conservative because we kept the margin in a borrowing authority. And we never used the borrowing authority, so I think it, looks right now in the very early, I mean, this is still early, right? We've only been doing it for a biennium, like it's a good decision. The rate increase is really separate and apart because actually your rates, your premiums, are supposed to actually cover the cost of health care. That's what you'd want it to do, but yet not make a profit. So the estimate, and again, I think in this whole analysis, which had a lot of experts and a lot of people, the ranges were from 6% to 20% need for a rate increase. So that committee, Kevin Hibbard and Alex Kane and Ralph Hayes from AGI and the actuary and a lot of people who I have a lot of confidence in really, really worked on this over the course of the summer. And the final analysis was that they believe, and nobody's going to give 100% guarantee, that a correct increase was 11.1%, that that'll cover the cost of health care. And that it'll be appropriate, but then you get into the problem explained in the early part of the letter that healthcare costs are based on a calendar year, and those increases go into a calendar year, so that complicates this even further. So at this point, with 11.1% increase, the existing budget will cover the employer's share of that increase, and the request to hold any reversions in a pool in the auditor's office, again, is not unprecedented. It has been done by this body before, would just capture if there needed to be an additional rate increase next December. And the cash balance looks to be good. Now, there was some debate about that. People who think it's too low, and people who think it's too light, but the cash balance is covered by the borrowing authority, which, as I said, was not necessary to use in the last biennium.
Representative Larson.
Thank you. So, Mrs. Gray, so at the end of the day, you have the borrowing authority. If any of that borrowing authority is used, then the loan repayment would be back from rate increases or premium increases moving forward.
That's correct.
Any other questions? Seeing none, let's move on to letter 10. Fire borrowing authority.
So this is the other borrowing authority that I referred to. So we have a fire account, a fire suppression account, and that fire suppression account currently has a balance of $18 million. At some point around 2011, that account had a balance of about $40 million, and it was kind of, I think, I don't know that I can name anybody responsible, but sort of an understood and given thing by both the legislature and the governor's office that $40 million was a comfortable amount of money to hold in that account in the event of a catastrophic kind of a fire. We did have a catastrophic fire in 2012. It burned thousands of acres, and we had to have – it was a type 1 fire. It was over in the Laramie Range and covered a significant amount of ground. The fire suppression account is funded both by a general fund appropriation and by dues paid by different counties that come into that account to help with the cost of fires. So as we faced reduced revenues and uncertain times, there was really, I think, almost an inability, given the other needs of the state, to restore the fund to the $40 million that people were comfortable for. And the alternative to restoring the fund to $40 million was, again, to set up borrowing authority. That borrowing authority has been in place, I think, now for two bienniums, and it's been actually, again, out of the pooled fund for the same reasons we discussed with regard to employee group insurance. The request is now to ask for that borrowing authority to be out of the LSRA because of the complexity of borrowing from the pooled funds. Again, we've never had need to use the borrowing authority, and there is, I think, a comfortable amount in the fire account at $18 million. But the cost of the – in that fire year – and some of that, this cost was borne by the federal government, because the federal government pays a proportionate share if federal lands are involved. But I think that the cost of the fires in 2012 were in excess of $100 million, and so it's a situation where you don't want to not be able to pay if you incur the cost, but again, a situation where I think everybody feels that it's a reasonably conservative thing to do, just to have the borrowing authority if it's necessary, rather than to have the money sitting in an account where it can't be used for other things.
Any questions? Seeing none, let's move on to letter 11.
Mr. Chairman, your letter 11 deals with the enrollment adjustment for your DD preschools. When the governor made his recommendations on December 1st, the enrollment count, which informs your state contribution, was not available to him by statute. That's a December 1st date. By statute, he drops his budget December 1st. So this letter requests an adjustment to the preschool enrollment to reflect an increase in preschool enrollment. The change is up 15 children. And so the total request is $126,045. And this adjustment, just because this has also been an issue with the committee, this is to the current per child number of $8,403 per student.
And this goes to which schools?
Mr. Chairman, your DD preschools are located throughout the state.
You're talking about the child development centers?
Yes.
Okay. Any questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hastert.
Mr. Chairman, in the Health Department of Health's budget request, they also have the ECA, the external cost adjustments, and the governor kind of pointed to the management audit report, and I just, is that why that's not addressed here, or is that something he's looking for, or what's the... I guess I'm just kind of looking for on the governor's reasons for not addressing the ECA yet.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hastert, the language, which is actually part of the agency's narrative in the agency 48 budget under that particular unit section, the agency pointed out that it has been in discussions with the management audit, and the management audit instruction to them was that they submit a number which reflected the ECA cumulative over time. And so you have in that budget narrative, there's a $9,000 number. The governor's recommendation is at odds with the management audit instruction. The governor's recommendation is for the $8,403 reimbursement rate to be increased by the actual enrollment number. I would, separate from that conversation, which the agency has had with your management audit committee, and which will no doubt continue as you get to the floor and discuss this budget. The last 2 years, the last year, the ECA is connected to what happens with your schools. The schools had a negative, not a negative ECA, but school budgets went down, as you're well aware. The previous year, there was no ECA, so that was held flat. So the $9,000, which is reflected in the agency budget, is reflective of previous year's ECAs, which were requested as compelled by law. The agency is required to request them, but which were not funded by the legislature. So to go back, the governor's recommendation is not supportive of that particular conversation, and his recommendation is for a reimbursement rate of $8,403 per student, and for the increase, which reflects an increase in enrollment of 15 children total.
Any other questions? Seeing none. Letter 12.
Alex.
Mr. Chairman, letter number 12 is a change in governor's recommendation, and this deals with tobacco income. The letter before you kind of walks through the history of investment earnings going back the last two biennium, and you see the trend in investment earnings somewhere between $2.3 and $2.7 million per year. The historical settlement payments, however, were trending around $18.5 million. We were informed by the Attorney General's office that there is a change in the settlement payments that we will see moving forward. And so those estimated payments for April of 2018 and April of 2019, which are key to this 19-20 biennium, have been reduced significantly from a projected $18 million to $17 million in April of 2018 and $18 million to $16.3 million for April of 2019. So with that in mind, you see the total estimated available revenue using the cash balance when the governor put his December 1st budget together, there was an anticipated revenue of $43.7 million. With those changes in the estimated annual master settlement payments, that drops to $41,076,757. So an adjustment needed to be made in the use of these tobacco funds in the governor's budget recommendations. What the governor is asking for is in the Department of Health's exception priority number 9 budget request, court supervised treatment or drug courts, to replace that $1 million of tobacco trust funds with special revenue in the agency fund 558. And not use tobacco settlement funds for this purpose. In addition to that, part of the money being used for this 19-20 biennium is actually a carryover of revenue available this fiscal year. And so in order for that money not to be swept, the governor would ask that there'd be about $3 million be effective immediate out of this 19-20 budget ask. One option would be to look at the Department of Corrections. They have about $8.9 million in their total tobacco trust fund asks in their agency budget for 19-20, and to identify $3 million of that to be effective immediate. this has been kind of an ongoing project, reducing these tobacco trust funds in agency budgets over the last two biennium, and so this is a continuation of reducing those funds out in agency budgets.
Representative Larson.
Alex, is that agency fund 558, is that carryover for the drug court monies that was tobacco settlement that was extra?
Mr. Chairman, when the Department of Health receives funding for court-supervised treatment, it essentially goes into its own fund, and then they spend that fund down. And so this would be using available cash balance that exists in that fund for the next biennium.
Representative Schwartz.
Thank you, Mr. What's the balance in that fund right now?
$6 million? I believe it's 5.8 to 6 million.
Mistake. Yeah.
Any other questions? Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What's the explanation of why the payments are lower? Is it because of interest or income down? Or?
Mr. Chairman, my understanding, and the Attorney General's office could probably articulate this better, but the agreements, we go through phases of the agreements, and there's less being paid into the escrow account, and so there's less to distribute out in total. And so we have hit a point where we're going through a new calculation, and Wyoming will receive less money moving forward.
And Mr. Co-Chair, what's the revenue source for the drug courts? Is that just appropriated dollars that's sitting there? So as soon as that's gone, then we're going to face this problem again in 2 years for another, or find another source for the drug court dollars?
Mr. Chairman, I believe there's a multiple sources of funding for drug courts, and tobacco was one of those sources of revenue. If you look at the burn rate of their existing funding, that this could carry on for several biennium, but it's not a long-term solution to the issue.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Seeing none. On to the last letter, 13.
Mr. Chairman, I apologize. I'm trying to find that letter.
Oh, I have it. Okay, I'm sorry.
Does that mean he's changed his mind?
No.
While we're waiting, yeah, maybe, yeah. I would just interject on this not in a letter, Mr. Chairman, which is I understand that the committee asked about the local government funding in Endow, and the governor did not include those in governor's letters. They're both reflected in his profile because in his work with leadership, including the chairs of this committee, I think there's some talk of a bill, an omnibus bill, and a local government bill. I think those are even already being drafted, and this appeared to be the better way to address those two particular funding issues.
So I'm not aware of a local government bill. Don, what do we know about that?
Mr. Chairman, that has been drafted. That was the Madden proposal from last year. You heard initial discussion on that, I believe it was last Thursday. Mm-hmm.
And on the Endow bill, is there a draft bill circulated yet for that?
Mr. Chairman, there is not a draft bill on that one that's available for circulation yet.
So, Mr. Chairman, I'm ready to talk about the university unless you have more questions about that. Mr. Chairman, your final letter today addresses the University of Wyoming's budget and what is a true correction. It is a significant correction, but it was an error in the calculations made. This traces its origin back to the way we addressed budget cuts beginning in 2016. Beginning in 2016, the legislature enacted the penny plan cuts, and the university was subjected to those, although by nature of the university's block grant, the implementation is always a little bit different than it would be for a traditional state agency. on the heels of the penny plan cut, you're all well aware that the governor then recognized the need for deeper cuts in state agencies and established targets for each of his agencies. And those resulted in the significant cuts that were made effective July 1, 2016, and applying to the 17-18 budget. The university, the governor traveled to meet with the Board of Trustees, and the governor gave them a target, which at the time was $35 million. The university has successfully reduced its budget by the target that the governor provided, but in the process, because personnel is so much part of the university budget, there are reductions in employees and savings that were realized, and there are also idiosyncrasies within the way we address that health insurance reimbursements to the University of Wyoming. Couple that with the new cut environment and people, new personnel on various sides. An error was made in which the State Budget Office reduced the University of Wyoming's insurance and retirement benefits for employees. So you'll see a letter. Your letter number 13 comes with a brief letter from the governor in which he refers to a letter from Vice President of Administration Bill Mai. Bill outlines the mistake, the need for a correction. The correction is in two pieces, $2.004 million for retirement benefits and $2.795 million for health insurance benefits. And by virtue of the way the university was asked to cut its budget, these are amounts that should be restored, please, to the university's standard budget, that 600 series, and not the direct health insurance line. With that, Mr. Chairman, my guess is you probably have questions, and I would defer to the university to answer those. Unless you don't have any questions.
Any questions?
Yeah. We heard about it already.
They've done their work, then. Good for them.
Okay.
I do have a question. I don't see a letter from Mr. Kocher from the governor regarding the science initiative. So I would just like confirmation on the governor's position on the authorizing the $100 million on the science initiative.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for the opportunity to answer that question. The governor's recommendation with regard to releasing already established funds for the science initiative can be found in the agency 67 budget. It is the university's top priority, and the governor in his recommendation outlines the benefits that he believes the science initiative has to the university and to the state. And so his recommendation is in support of the university's request that the funds be appropriated. The way you set that up is the money flows into an account, but it is subject to further appropriation. The governor concurs with the university's request within the 67 budget. Beyond that, Mr. Chairman, I would point you to the governor's budget message in which he outlines, again, the benefits of the research opportunities, the fact that the facilities will be subject to a competitive research process in campus, the integration of the disciplines, and the opportunities for students to have a real innovative education in the sciences. He has personally heard from a number of Wyoming students who have been able to participate in the undergraduate research programs, and with some emotion, these kids talk to him about how that has already changing their lives and how the new facility could further expand those. And I would just conclude with the line in the governor's message there that the initiative, the building, is a promise that was made by the legislature over multiple sessions. The funds are available, and they should be made available without delay.
Anything else? Anyone else?
So, Mr. Coach.
You need your mic.
So I'm just wondering about the number of times that you'll have the opportunity to present in front of us again. Are pretty limited.
Yeah.
So.
Well, depending on if you call us back.
So we just want to thank you very much for your service and your time, and it's a pretty neat thing to be a part of the process. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, ladies. All right, let's take about a 10-minute break. We'll come back, and then we'll work on some bills.